live and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when you, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see their night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
It was my mistake with you know, a little bit of naive, being a little bit naive, you know, thinking it'd be quicker maybe to have the attorneys involved to get things done. And that just makes it longer. And so, I wish that I could go back to that Friday and change things. But I can't, and I was pleased once the attorneys got together. They were able to, figure things out and hammer things out, and ultimately set up a meeting. It was just, like Amy said, 37 days or 30. It was 40 some odd days later than we would have wanted it.
Good morning and welcome to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, the man rocking his Cubbies attire today. The one and only Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos. We'll be more than happy to take y'all's phone call this morning. Just give us a buzz on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got plenty to get to today. We're going to discuss the sports betting bill that died yesterday. We're going to talk a little bit about that in the third hour. And we're also going to welcome on Mark Ballard. He's the Capital News reporter for the Baton Rouge Advocate. He's going to break it all down for us, how the bill gained momentum and then all of a sudden came to a screeching halt, died yesterday in Appropriations Committee. We'll dissect that in the third hour. We'll also get a little NBA Finals preview in the third hour as well as we welcome on Daniel Brown from The Athletic. Second hour, we're going to talk to the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair, and Ron Higgins from Tiger Details, who's going to be reporting, giving us a live report from Destin, home of the SEC Spring Meeting. But we're going to lead off today talking about the man that you heard right there, Will Wade. He spoke to the media for the first time since being suspended, had a press conference. It was, at times, awkward, would be a good way of describing it. A turbulent year ends with an interesting press conference. He had lots to say, and then at the same hand, not a lot to say. It was a weird press conference, to say the least. A big thing that he did kind of admit to is that he wished that he could have handled it better before the Vanderbilt game. Remember, the Vanderbilt game was the regular season finale there inside the PMAC, where he supposedly is supposed to be meeting with LSU officials on that Friday. He gets suspended. Javonte Smart gets held out of the game. of the student section led the chance of fire Joe Oliva. Hey, that ended up actually working out. But this is what Wade had to say yesterday about how he wished he could have handled it better.
Well, it wasn't, it was a complicated situation. And like I said, when it first occurred, I made a mistake. I wish it wouldn't have taken 38 days for that to happen. And then once, like I said earlier, once you get lawyers involved, once it kind of gets out of, your hands or me dealing directly with people and you've got lawyers involved, it makes things quite a bit more complicated. And I severely underestimated, maybe how long it would take for them, for the lawyers and for those folks to work through some of those issues. And so I think that's what ultimately made things last, quite a bit longer than any of us wanted to. And that's why I wish going back I could have found a way to, handle it better on that Friday before the Vanderbilt game.
Now, once again, that's two clips we just played for you from yesterday's press conference from the SEC spring meetings held in Destin, Florida. Well, that's a good beat if you get it, right? Be like, yes, what do you got to do this week? I have to go to Destin, Florida. Cover some meetings. Sneak in some beach time. We'll ask Ron Higgins how much beach time he's getting in. So, that's two clips right there. Once again, my thought process is this. Oh, man, we threw those lawyers under the bus, didn't we? Well, I shouldn't have trusted my lawyer. Maybe I shouldn't have, it's the lawyers and the lawyers and the lawyers. And it's like, okay. It's his first public comments since March 7th. Yesterday he spoke behind a podium in a conference room full of reporters there in the Hilton Sandestin Beach Resort. At times, the presser, he was seemingly apologetic, contrite, even remorseful. Other times, he wasn't very completely forthright and came off like Will Wade kind of comes off. A little arrogant. Once again, he was not there. He helped lead LSU to a regular season SEC title, its first in a decade. But the team advanced to the Sweet 16 without him because he had refused to meet with the school and NCAA officials over a wiretap phone conversation recounted in a Yahoo Sports story in which Wade discussed a strong-ass offer and the recruitment of Javonte Smart. Wade was reinstated 37 days later in April, and then a couple days after that, Joe Oliva, the athletic director, was forced out and has now since been replaced by former Texas A&M AD Scott Woodward. How do we feel about this? How do we feel about, does this change your opinion about Will Wade? When asked directly on the meeting between himself, LSU and the NCAA, this is what Will Wade had to say about that.
I was fully cooperative. I disclosed everything and answered any and all questions completely and fully with LSU and with the NCAA. That ultimately led to my reinstatement as the head coach at LSU, and what was said in those meetings is private and confidential. That was how the meeting was set up, so I can't get into a lot of the details or any of the details in that meeting, but the meeting was very, very thorough and covered any and all topics.
I'm not surprised that he said that because he really can't, because that is a behind-the-scenes meeting that was held And the university probably doesn't want him to elaborate on what was said in that meeting as well. He also said this when asked if his recruiting efforts will change. Now, mind you, that's where this all comes in, is recruiting of players. That's part of the wiretap conversation. It's a part of a corruption trial directly linked to low-level middlemen between shoe companies and players and college coaches. Okay, and his name wasn't the only one mentioned. Sean Miller at the with the Arizona Wildcats was also part of this as well. Just one of many coaches that were mentioned in the grander reporting of all of this due to this investigation. You know, and obviously the Javonte Smart is a strong-ass offer thing. That's part of recruiting. And they just landed a big, you know, five-star prospect out of the state of Alabama, the Gatorade Player of the Year, multiple state champion. He was asked directly yesterday, will his recruiting efforts change?
You know, I've come off as a little bit brash, to be honest. And I think that's probably rubbed some folks the wrong way. And that's my fault. That's my fault. And so will it change the way we recruit? I mean, we're still going to recruit the best players we can to LSU. But, you know, I need to make sure that I'm confident about what we're doing and I'm confident about what we're selling. But there's a line that you can't get up to. And I think maybe sometimes I've gotten to that point where it's a little bit too brash. But we're going to continue to be aggressive. We're going to continue to recruit the best players that we can recruit, you know, we're excited about where we're going. Yes, Ed.
He also answered about the latest reports concerning him, because obviously Will's name was constantly in the news. Multiple media outlets were reporting things on him from the time that he decided not to meet with LSU officials right before the Vanderbilt game and the regular season finale at the PMAC to now. And this is what the formerly embattled second-year head coach of the LSU men's basketball program had to say about that.
I will say this on the latest reports that was not covered with my meeting with LSU. It's absolutely false and did not happen. The latest report that came out of the latest trial. So I'm very proud to be the basketball coach at LSU. I'm very confident with how we've run our basketball program, and I look forward to starting my third season at LSU and trying to lead LSU back to the NCAA tournament and to the a back-to-back Southeastern Conference championship.
He's also referring there to the Naz Reid report that came out, I guess, what, about 3 weeks ago, Cody, where they said that there was an offer there between Will Wade and Naz Reid. Wade has also talked about yesterday that he had a good meeting with the new man in charge, his new boss, new athletic director, Mr. Woodward. This is what Will had to say about their initial meeting that they've had.
I've had good meetings with Scott, but it's like I said earlier, you know, I don't know Scott. And so it's a trust building process. I need to build trust with Scott, and that comes through action. You know, trust is following through on what you say you're going to do. And so it's really just going to take time with Scott to continue to build trust and continue to build upon the foundation that we've started. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that opportunity. I'm looking forward to continuing to coach at LSU and working with Scott to continue to deliver championships for LSU.
Will Wade talking to the media yesterday at the SEC spring meetings in Destin, Florida. We're going to dive more into that. I'm going to dive more into what Will Wade had to say yesterday. Plenty more to get to right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Obviously, this has been a difficult couple months for LSU and for our basketball program. As the leader of the basketball program, I'm here today to start the process of rebuilding trust and building a trust. I think certainly, as I've had time to reflect since I was out for 40 days or so, there were some mistakes that I made.
Some mistakes that I've made. Will Wade, LSU head men's basketball coach, talking to the members of the media there at SEC spring meetings held in Destin, Florida. That occurred yesterday. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out, if you like, on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. You also can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. You can share your thoughts with us. He talked about the mistakes he made, and he further kind of elaborated about that. Well, elaborated as much as Will Wade, and I'm going to be honest here, that he could. He further elaborated about those mistakes that he made during yesterday's press conference.
As a basketball coach, you've got to make a lot of decisions, and you have to make decisions quickly and process a lot of information quickly. And certainly, as I look back, that Friday, where we were going to meet with the administration, I think I made a poor decision in how I handled that. If I could go back and do it again, I would have taken the meeting and been a little bit more forceful in getting that meeting. You know, because what happened after that is, anytime you get lawyers involved in things, things get drawn out. At that point, it was more face-to-face interaction on things. And so anytime after that, the lawyers got involved, it took it out almost 40 days. I don't know the exact time period, but it took it out a very, very long time. So
a very long, long time. Once again, mistakes made, but then puts the lawyers involved there. Now, I will say this. Once he switched lawyers or added the high-profile attorney based out of Chicago, who is also representing Sean Miller, things changed. A meeting was held, contract was renegotiated, and he was reinstated. And that happened fairly quickly. So you got someone involved with NCAA investigations dealing with coaches that are dealing with breaking the rules, infractions, things of that nature. And things turned around between him and LSU. He was asked yesterday about those changes to his contract. Because if you remember, he was reinstated, and then we found out later that week that part of the deal of him being reinstated was it made it easier. He agreed to amendments to his contract that allowed the university to fire him more easily. And he was asked about that, and this is what he had to say.
You know, the contract amendment was something that came out of the meeting with LSU and the NCAA. And so I think the contract amendment showed, not only LSU, LSU reinstated me, showed LSU's commitment to me. I think the contract amendment showed my commitment to LSU and how we've run the program and how we're going to, continue to move forward and continue to run the.
Cody, you've heard what Will Wade has had to say there. Your just thoughts as a diehard LSU fan, basketball fan, and just a fan of the university in general, your thoughts on what took place yesterday in Destin?
He did what he had to do. I mean, he got up there, he said sorry. I don't know, worked for the guy from BP. I guess it'll work per Will Wade.
My man brought up the oil spill. I like it. Okay, continue.
I mean, what else did you expect him to do? He's not going to go up there. He's not going to go up there and say, yeah, I did all this stuff. You got me. Duh. He's not going to go up there and say that, you know, yeah, you should probably, you know, get rid of me. You shouldn't trust me as the coach here. You know, there's no shot in me building any trust with anybody in this program any longer. Sorry. Like, what did you want him to say? I mean, so the problem is you have to wonder how much truth there is behind the things that he's saying. And that will come to light sooner rather than later, because we can't act like there aren't so many eyes on this LSU basketball program now just to see where this story is going to go, because it could be a great story where Will Wade comes back and this LSU program rallies and they do incredible things this season, or it could be one of those train wreck stories that I can't look away. Look how bad this is getting down in Baton Rouge. So what I'm saying is it's going to take more actions before I really have a strong feeling, but he did what he had to do, so good job on that. Somebody wrote him a good little script.
I felt it was an okay press conference. I felt like he did what he needed to do. And even if you look at people that reported on the presser yesterday, Cody, the pendulum swings, right? Some people thought he was contrite and remorseful, while others thought it was BS. Okay, so it swung both ways. I have no strong feelings about it regardless. This type of stuff happens all the time in college, big-time college athletics. Okay? And if the FBI doesn't want him and doesn't require him to testify for a trial and everything like that, and the federal government's not involved, and we know the NCAA drags their feet on these kind of things as it is. You know, I guess my bigger question to you is, do you trust Will Wade? Or does it even matter? Do you need to trust your coach? I don't know if you need to be honest with you. I don't know if you really need to be able to trust your head coach. We'll actually put it up on the Twitter poll question. Will Wade's all about rebuilding trust. Our question to you is very direct. Do you trust Will Wade? Yes or no? We'll throw that up on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account and let you get after it. More RP3 and Company after this, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We have the Twitter poll question about to be up. You can go vote on it on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Will Wade is all about rebuilding the trust between he and the LSU program and the LSU fan base. Very simple, straightforward question. Do you trust Will Wade? Yes? No? Very simple. We could also make an option, don't care, if we'd like to. Because that's where I think people really feel about this. I think you have a very vocal minority on both sides. I think you have a very vocal minority of people that are just up in arms, that this is eroding the integrity of the game, of the spirit of the NCAA. I laughed a little bit while saying that. College athletics has always been big business. Nothing has changed. The days of the old Southwest Conference, where someone purchases and buys a damn car for Eric Dickerson while he's still in high school, and that team didn't even get him to come to their college, and the team that did get him, SMU, went ahead and paid off the car for the other team. Okay? This has been going on, guys, for like 50 years. Football, basketball, baseball, I don't care what sport it is. It can be freaking lacrosse. It does not matter. It doesn't. There's always going to be people associated with any athletic program, whether it's a coach or whether it's a middleman or whether it's a quote-unquote, you know, AAU coach or travel ball coach or an uncle. I always love the uncles that come out of the woodwork. You always see them on signing day. You're like, who's that? Oh, that's my uncle. When's the last time you saw your uncle? About 4 years ago until about 3 months ago when all of a sudden colleges were wanting to quote-unquote recruit me. This is how it works. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it wrong. It's just what the reality of the situation is. There's so much money in big-time college athletics that when you have that kind of river of funds flowing through, it's going to attract all types of people. And there's always going to be someone out there that wants to benefit. And there's always going to be someone out there that's willing to break the rules. And there's always going to be someone out there that has the money to make it happen. That is the reality. It just is. Once again, I'm not saying it's right, morally speaking. But the world of big-time college athletics does not exist in a prism of black and white colors. It doesn't. It's always been a murky gray. And there's always been corruption in all the sports at every level. Division I, Division II, Division III. I've covered sports long enough to know this. I've heard the rumors. I've seen kids in high school relocate from one school to another, pack up their stuff, and tell the members of the media that come and say, hey, why are you moving? And go, oh, man, this is a business decision. They're 17 years old. They're 16 years old. This happens. Public school, private school, select, non-select, it doesn't matter. So this filters all the way down to high schools and, from colleges down. When you have that much money involved, this is what happens. But I think you have a small portion of the population, a minority, a very vocal minority, but a minority nonetheless, that is railing against Will Wade and is railing against the fact that this guy gets another opportunity and that he should not be allowed to coach and what he did to the program and everything like that. I personally don't feel that Will Wade is a very likable coach. He comes off as arrogant. He just does. He comes off that he's the smartest guy in the room. He carries himself that way. Okay. But he's a good coach, technically speaking. Good recruiter, good coach. He proved it every stop along the way. So it doesn't matter if I like him or if I like how he handles a press conference. That's irrelevant. So you have that vocal minority that's upset right now, and particularly our brothers and sisters over at Yahoo Sports who are not happy with their reporting not leading to someone being fired. Let's be honest there. Then you have the other vocal minority that will ride and die with Will Wade and will defend him and think this is a witch hunt. It's not a witch hunt. It goes both ways. Vocal minority believes that he should be gone because he is tarnished the brand of LSU. Then you have another vocal minority that wants to defend him. And you know what? They're both kind of right. If you feel that way, that's good. You're entitled to feel that way. But I think for the majority of the people, I think the majority of sports fans, majority of LSU fans, the majority of folks here in the state of Louisiana kind of don't care. They're filled with apathy when it comes to their big-time college athletics. I could be wrong. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on Doc to the program. Doc, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I think the biggest issue here, I think, is, you know, you say color gray. I think the color is green. And the simple fact of the matter is that people with money are going to be above their, I mean, in this day and age, if you have enough money, you can get what you want. You can look at sports. You can look at athletics or academics with the college scandals and people saying, oh, it only takes $100,000 for my student to go to your school. It doesn't matter that it was for other people. I think the issue here is it's just simply cash. And until that changes, you know, maybe we should, why don't we call it a stipend instead of a student loan that we could be paying these athletes or giving these athletes. And if they play for 4 years, maybe they work their loan off, as it were. I don't know.
Doc, I appreciate the phone call, and I want to touch on what Doc says. I've said that before. I love that idea. And me and Cody have talked about this on the air, is this notion, if you want to get rid of corruption and you want to get rid of the possibility of the color green dominating how things operate, set up a system in place where these kids can get money once they leave school. It can be a stipend. It can be a set amount. It does not have to be an enormous amount of money, because 9 times out of 10, when we talk about the recruits involved in these scandals or the rumors about recruits signing with places, it's not an enormous amount of money, right? It's never $1.2 million, okay? It's not like they won a lottery ticket. It's $100K, $50,000, $30,000. Now, to a lot of people, that's a lot of money. And I'll raise my hand, and that includes me, okay? And I know my man Cody Schutz would agree with that as well. That said, if you put something in place where you come to the university and based on how many semesters you stay there, and if you maintain a GPA, you know, a certain GPA, and you go to class and you just don't take, you know, sitting in the Nutrition Center 101 for 4 semesters, you actually take legit classes and you do everything like that, and you keep your nose clean, once you graduate, you know, your money goes into a fund, and then the university cuts you a check and says, here you go. That can help you pay off student loans. That can help you buy a car. That can help you put a down payment on a house for your mom and dad, because a lot of these kids, that's what they want to do. They want to take care of the people that took care of them growing up in harsh economic circumstances 9 times out of 10. Why isn't that idea already done? Because if you do that, you're not going to get rid of all the corruption. It's not going to happen. But you can limit the corruption's impact. And if a kid or if a recruit knows, if they say they come to their local university to play college athletics, and once they're done after 2-3 years, they'll get so much money, they're not going to be inclined to let some low-level scumbag middleman, shoe rep, whoever it may be, influence their inner circle to take a deal to go somewhere else. You can't sit here and keep saying, well, you know, it's wrong what's going on, and not come up with a solution. If you want to try to at least slow down, or at least fight even a little bit corruption in big-time college athletics, then you have to change your mindset. You have to be like, okay. You know, take Zion Williamson, for example. He went to Duke for, what, a semester? Then another half of a semester? And then when the tournament's done, he declares for the draft, he's gone. Okay. Or even take Ben Simmons, who was here for a cup of coffee in Baton Rouge. Hey, you're here this long, this is what you get. If you do that, it will help combat this issue that we're having in big-time college athletics. And once again, I'll say it. Don't be so naive to think that this is only happening at a few programs. Don't forget North Carolina. The NCAA invested North Carolina for, what, a decade, Cody, was it, for the academic fraud scandal that ended up, nothing happened. They investigated, they proved that there was academic fraud, and then all of a sudden there was like, there's no punishment. So this is happening at North Carolina. Tobacco Road, Tar Heels, This is look back just in the history of the last 40 years, and there's not a single conference that has not been tarnished and has had some type of recruiting scandal associated with it in at least one sport. There just isn't. Alabama, boom. Happened a couple times. Miami, Ohio State. You just go through it. It happens everywhere. So we have to change our mindset on how we're going to approach these things and what we're going to do to change it. Doc made a great point. I'm glad he called. I love getting a phone call in the first hour, damn it. Makes me happy. Gets my morning started off on the right foot. We're going to wrap up the first hour a little more. LSU men's basketball news. Another player has decided to come back. Say what? That's right. The coach is back. Answering questions in lovely Destin. I need to get back to Destin. I do enjoy myself. Fort Walton, Destin areas. Tremendous. My mom's originally from that area. It's very nice. We'll talk about the latest addition to come back to the LSU men's basketball team, not named Will Wade. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber. That's 133 and 1133 in HD. Well, the other shoe dropped yesterday as Emmett Williams withdrew his name from the NBA draft. He's returning to LSU as well. And that means the Tigers have themselves a hell of a team for next year. Their freshman forward was the last of the four other guys. There was a total of four guys that declared for the draft. They were considering. They were trying to go through the process of getting feedback from the NBA. We knew Tremont Waters, the sophomore point guard, all SEC selection, co-defensive player of the year in the SEC, that he was gone. He had flirted with it last year, and he declared we knew that he was gone, and he's actually improved his draft stock now from being a guy possibly going undrafted to now looking like he's going to be drafted, maybe in the second round. Remember, the NBA only has two rounds for the draft. Naz Reid, he's either going to be an early second round or late first rounder. He was the freshman, all SEC freshman selection, the big fella. We knew that he was gone. He was going to be a one-and-doneer even before he came to LSU. They lost those two, but they had a rash of other guys while their coach was being suspended, Will Wade, that decided they wanted to test. The first to come back was Javonte Smart. That kind of had a domino effect. And Skylar Mays and Marlon Taylor, the other guards, decided to come back. Skylar for his senior season, Marlon for his senior season, or junior season, I do believe. And that only left forward Emmett Williams. Well, Emmett withdrew yesterday right before the deadline. He averaged 7 points per game. And a new LSU freshman record in field goal percentage with 61.4%. He played in all 34 games for the Tigers, starting in 8 of them. Averaging about 20 minutes a game. So LSU had a total of 6 players declare for the draft. Like I said, Naz Reid, Tremont Waters, they are going to the NBA. Everyone else came back.
I actually saw it yesterday. I took a quick trip back to the hospital to go see the baby and everything again. And Dad had on the hospital room TV, I don't know what to call it, the TV in the room, he had on the NBA Combine. And they were playing the 5-on-5 game.
Okay.
Where they play like 3 or 4 different ones because there's so many kids, they split them up. But Tremont Waters was on the court for the gray team, and they were dominating the white. It was like 90 to like 50-something towards the end of the second half. It was not looking good, but Tremont Waters was doing his thing at the combine, at least. I happened to catch him. I mean, He's pretty easy to pick out between the hair and being a foot and a half shorter than everyone else. It's pretty easy to pick out. But he did good. He looked good at the combine.
It's one of your brethren, is what you're saying.
Right, exactly. There. But Tremont Waters, I wasn't surprised to see how good he did look, because he's absolutely one of those guys that the better players that are around him, the more impressive he's going to look, because the more ridiculous types of passes and things he's going to be able to do because of the skill level of the players around him. And that was obvious just at the combine. Imagine if he makes it to
the association. He turns heads at the combine. The report's coming out that he was the guy that really impressed front offices. He impressed him with also his interviews. So, you know, this is a guy, you know, the biggest thing on Tremont is his height and his turnovers. Okay, well, he can't change his height. There's nothing he can do about that. That said, if he can reduce the number of turnovers, he could have a spot in this league. Nas Reed, on the other hand, has far more, quote-unquote, potential. You know, watching him develop last year, I've said it before, he did not know how to play within his own body, which is a weird thing. But those guys are gone. The guys coming back, senior Skylar Mays, Marlon Taylor, sophomore Javonte Smart, they're going to lead the way, and now Emmett Williams will be a sophomore. They add the kid out of the state of Alabama, the Gatorade Player of the Year. They add another JUCO guy and another freshman. They already got three guys coming in as part of this signing class. And then they have two players last year that Tyler Nunes has told us about that should be phenomenal players as well that were essentially redshirted. So they still could add another player too. So LSU basketball in good hands. Coach off the hot seat, been reinstated. And the majority of the team is now coming back as well. Make sure to go vote on our 103.7 The Game Twitter poll question. Simple. Do you trust Will Wade? Yes or no? That'll do it for our first hour. We'll talk more about the Will Wade presser and the state of the basketball team with our good friend Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com. He joins us next to lead off the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. We spent the first hour talking LSU men's basketball. Dived in on a little bit there on the tail end of hour number one. Emmett Williams deciding to return as expected, joining Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, and Marlon Taylor as four Tigers returning to the basketball program. But we spent the better part of the hour, even took calls on Will Wade, who surprisingly had a press conference yesterday at the SEC spring meetings held in lovely Destin, Florida. And we're going to head out to the ARCO equipment hotline and welcome on our next guest who was there reporting on that, interrupting his beach time to have to cover something pertaining to LSU men's basketball team. So I'll ask him if it really did interfere with too much of his beach time. It's the one and only from TigerDetails.com, our good friend Ron Higgins. Ron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Honest to God, when you cover one of these things, you never see the beach because you're constantly hanging outside of meeting rooms waiting for coaches to come out of them. You know, unless there's a arranged press conference like they had yesterday. They always arrange press conferences on the first day with you know, coaches. And, you know, last couple of weeks, I know that myself, and I don't know who else, but, you know, we've talked LSU. We knew that Will Wade was going to be here. And we said, listen, you know, we'll be, we'd like to talk to him. And, you know, if he doesn't want to do it in front of everybody, you know, we'll do it in a small group with just the Louisiana guys. But they decided to put him up in front of everybody and yesterday. And I thought it was a different Will Wade as far as just being very contrite. And you could tell that he personality-wise, he kind of dialed it back. Nor realized he kind of screwed up. And was trying to just, you know, like you said, get people's trust back. So it was interesting. It really was. I mean, you know, some of the national media there roasted him and said, you know, the press conference was worthless. Honest to God, man, I don't know what they expected him to say. I mean, did they expect him to come out like Nick Nolte and Blue Chips and, you know, sure, I bought Neon Bedoya car. He didn't want one. He didn't want a Mercedes, but I bought him one. You know, but they expect Will Wade to come out and say, hey, you know, Nazareth didn't want $350,000, but I gave it to him anyway. I mean, I swear to God, I mean, these guys are national media, and a lot of my friends, you know, I've known them forever, and they're good reporters, they're good guys, but sometimes I just wonder what the hell they expect a guy to say. I'm amazed that Will even came out there and talked. He didn't have to, but he came out there and talked, and he denied the Nazareth thing. He said he couldn't talk about all the other stuff just yet. He may eventually, and then talked about you know how it was to sit out the NCAA tournament and watch and admit he made a mistake by not meeting with LSU immediately and having the lawyers involved. I thought he did what he needed to do, and I mean, as much as he could do at that point. And as far as everybody else kind of canning his performance about, you know, what didn't say anything, but I wouldn't say anything either. You know, not until I'm comfortable with doing it, or the lawyer said I could do it. But so anyway, I thought it was needed, and I thought it was okay.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com and here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. And Ron, for me, watching it from afar, seeing the transcripts, seeing the press conference live and watching it, I was interested to see how two different national media people wrote columns or opinion pieces about the presser, and the tone was totally different. Yahoo Sports was outraged and it was very upset about how the press conference and how Will Wade handled it. And then Ross Dellinger for SI had a different tone to his piece. And I'm just like, it's probably a little bit of both. Like, it's just, you know, once again, it's a press conference from a guy who was, it has been an embattled coach with his university, national scrutiny. Lawyers got involved. There's only going to be so much that he's going to be able to state, right? So, like you said, what can you really expect to get out of it?
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I've known Pat Forty a long time with Yahoo. He's like I said, I've known him since his days. We worked for Louisville Courier Journal, and he is a really good writer. And he's very opinionated, and he has a right to his opinion to be outraged. That's fine, but again, what the hell do you expect the guy to say? I mean, really, did you expect the full disclosure and throw himself on the mercy of the court? I mean, just I did everything. Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's insane. You can't, as Ricky Nelson once sang, you can't please everybody, so you got to please yourself. And basically, that's, you know, what Will Wade did. I mean, he wanted to start making amends, and he knew he had to get there sooner or later, and this was a kind of a way to do it. You know, the only mistake he might have made in all this was not doing this in Baton Rouge before all the Louisiana media, the ones who couldn't, you know, come here. This is something, the spring business meetings, I've done these things since they started like 1982. So I've done these things forever, and I know how they work. And you get a small group of media. It's not like SEC media days where there's a cast of thousands. You probably have 20 media guys here, 20, 25 media guys at tops. It's a chance to get to all the coaches, all the ADs, all the basketball coaches, men's and women's, and school presidents. You see them, you talk to them. It's a chance to, you know, discuss the issues of the league that are coming up. And then, like I said, the last 4 or 5 years, the sports base directors have been smart enough to schedule coaches on the first day, the ones who want to talk to media on the first day. And, you know, just kind of, you know, so yesterday they had like 4 or 5 coaches yesterday, and Will was one of 2 basketball coaches who spoke. He spoke last yesterday of all the coaches who wanted to speak.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. So, Ron, we talked about, you know, national perception and everything like that, but the presser is now, you know, he's done with it. He says that he's all about rebuilding the trust. He did mention that a lot during the press conference. He also mentioned a lot of mistakes. He also mentioned a lot of it. He kept mentioning his lawyers and everything, and that's fine if that's, you know, the approach. I guess I don't blame him on that, going, so, well, you know, I trusted my lawyers too much, and that was a mistake and everything like that. But that's now said. It's out in the open. It's done with. He says he wants to rebuild the trust. Your opinion, and this, I'll give you my opinion real quick, Ron. I don't think people care. I just don't. I think there's a very vocal minority that say that he shouldn't have his job, and there's a very vocal minority that say that, you know, this has been a witch hunt, and then everyone else is in between, and they all just kind of don't care. They just like seeing a good product on the court, and that's all that matters. They don't care what it takes to make that happen. How do you think this is going to go over with the people back in Baton Rouge?
I absolutely agree. I agree 100% with that. People don't care. Okay? There are bigger problems in this world than a guy allegedly paying players that hadn't been proved. On transcript, it looks bad, but hadn't been proved. And so, subsequently, I agree. People don't care. They care about the product being put on the floor. That's why they were such outraged at the beginning that he was, you know, that he didn't get a chance to coach, because they felt like he was, you know, and found guilty before he even had a chance to explain. And of course, it was, like you said, it's his fault he didn't explain, but that was part of the deal, you know. And I feel you're right. Yeah, people don't care. They just want to see the product on the floor. And obviously, everybody is coming back. I mean, like we thought, you know. We knew the 2 guys would probably stick, and they stuck in the draft. The only place this is going to stand up and linger is probably in the national media every once in a while, and definitely when LSU plays road games, because he's going to absolutely hear it from opposing fans.
No, you don't mean it.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, he'll just absolutely get roasted by opposing fans and student bodies. But, you know, that's part of the deal. It can't be any more challenging or tougher than some of the things LSU had to go through this past year basketball-wise. So I feel like this team can probably handle it. So has the storm passed? It looks like it. You hope it has. I'm glad he talked for the first time yesterday, since the day before the Vanderbilt game. The last time we all saw Will Wade, we were at LSU tip-off lunching at Le Bourget Casino the day before the Vanderbilt game, and he was speaking to the crowd and was a packed house, and he was happy, and everybody was happy. And while he was speaking, our phones are going off with the alert that Yahoo released the story with his name in it. It was kind of a really bizarre circumstance that day. It was good to see him again, and hope, you know, they, you know, come back with another great team. I think they'll have another competitive team next year, and we'll kind of go from there.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, let's talk a little bit about that team. Emmett Williams made the decision as expected that he's coming back. That now gives the basketball team Skylar Mason, Marlon Taylor. We know Skylar really kind of flourished this year as one of the guards. You'll have him at the two. You'll have Javonte Smart coming back as a sophomore. He'll run the point because that's what he did in absence of Tremont Waters last year due to injury. And then you'll have Marlon Taylor who can jump out of the gym. Emmett Williams is going to be back as well. They got the two guys that were essentially redshirted last year that we expect a lot of. And then this recruiting class that features the JUCO, a freshman, and then the other star freshman out of Alabama. Any more moves in between now and the start of the season? Can they still add another kid? Do you expect them to do that? Maybe someone that can be a post player like Cavill Bigby Williams was. What do you expect from LSU moving forward with the recruiting class?
I'd always expected, you know, that they'll come up with somebody else. If they can improve their team and with a big body, they will. I can't tell you who that would be or how it would happen, but I could say that, you know, Will's the type of guy who looks at recruiting as very fluid and tries to fill needs. And obviously they need some, you know, need some length and some big people, even though they do have some great 6'5", 6'6", players that can absolutely, you know, their verticals are just freakish. But they do need some probably a little bit bigger, longer bodies would help them. I never doubt that they're constantly recruiting, looking for somebody. I can't tell you exactly who that is, but I know they'll be looking all summer.
And what do you think the expectations should be for this team now that everything's kind of in the past and Will Wade's reinstated? You have the talent they have coming in and the talent coming back. Is this a team that should start off the season ranked in the top 25 and have Sweet 16 expectations once again, Ron?
I would say right now, I would say NCAA tournament expectations. I would say Sweet 16 expectations, but I think as you lose – when you lose Naz, but particularly when you lose Tremont, who is the absolute, you know, clutch heartbeat of that team, you have to find some way to replace that and compensate for it. And you have to, you know, put together some chemistry on this team with some new guys. I mean, the fact they have all the returning players are good. I wouldn't call them a Sweet 16 team yet, but I think they're an NCAA tournament team. And depending on who else they get this year and I think they'll be very good. I mean, will it be better at this past year? I don't know. In this past year, they won so many close games that were ridiculous. And I don't know how long you can keep doing that. But I do think they're an NCAA tournament team at this point right now, and we'll see how it develops.
Talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, I want to get your thoughts about this LSU baseball team. I know you'll be back from Destin this weekend to cover the NCAA regional. Are you at all surprised that LSU managed to make a run in Hoover and jump all the way up from not hosting a regional to being the 13 national seed and hosting there at Alex Box Stadium?
I thought that they would have a chance of winning at least two in Hoover. And they surprised us by winning three, almost won four. I thought that the starting pitching was better, gave them a chance, and they hit the ball a lot better. I think their key game was, you know, beating Auburn after losing the 17 inning thing at Mississippi State, just to come back and be competitive in that and then win the game on a freakish wild pitch was a huge, I thought that was a make or break deal for them. They needed to win at least two games, I thought, to get a seed. And obviously they improved the seed by hammering Mississippi State the second time they played them. So, the starting pitching was better. The relief pitching was outstanding. The relief pitching was great almost all the way through. And again, they finally hit the ball some. And so it kind of got them through to where they are now. And we'll see what happens. It's an interesting regional matchup. There's no pushover in this regional. You know, Stony Brook, we don't have to say that word to many times to LSU fans. They all know Stony Brook. Arizona State, LSU's never played them. than Paul's ever played. I mean, and they've always been a pretty good Pac-12 team. And then Southern Mississippi has been outstanding this year. I mean, won their league. And I think they're kind of a vastly underrated, and they're dangerous. So it's a really competitive regional. It's no walkover for LSU. They're going to have to bust their butt to get out of this regional. And I, obviously, if they get out of this regional, they'll go up to Adams to play Georgia, where they lost 2 of 3 this year. But just the fact that they rallied to get a regional is a good deal. Yeah, they're all starting to play. They've played better than they've won 6 of their last 9 games, which is something they haven't done in a while. So you kind of feel maybe if they get some pitching this weekend, they'll be okay. I mean, to me, I think everything runs off their pitching. I think when their pitching is good, their hitters relaxed and they're confident to play. They're not pressing as much. And then when they hit it, and when this year when they've gotten down 4 and 5 dust after 2 or 3 innings, you can see the LSU hitters just lock up trying to just press it. So it's the key is to hold teams down early. And it helps hitters relax, and LSU gets some offense going, and then they bring in the relief pitchers, and Alec Essa out. So they've had great relief pitching. Almost everybody they've pitched at SEC tournament. So played a lot better last week.
Ron, appreciate you making some time for us, and brother, I hope you at least get an extended lunch break sometime in the next couple of days, and get to go check out the beach just a little bit, man. I mean, you've been doing this for almost 40 years out there, going to the spring meetings in Destin, and not to be able to enjoy some beach time makes me a little sad, brother. So why don't you take some time for yourself next couple of days?
We'll see. We'll work in 20 minutes to put my feet in the sand. Okay. All right,
bro.
Back every weekend. All right,
brother. See ya. Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up right here on 103.7 The Game.
Rifles this one to right field. Pretty deep. Going back on it is the right fielder Hayward, and it's gone. Alex Bregman's 11th home run of the month.
Alex Bregman, he's good at hitting home runs. That's what I got from last night's game as the Houston Astros defeated the Chicago Cubs 9-6 in Game 2 of their series there at Minute Maid Park. The Astros improved to 37-19 overall on the season. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Bregman is an absolute monster. The third game of the three-game series will wrap up tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Reminder, it'll be the good brother, Ben Love, from 4 to 6, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Then it'll be Five Guys, Stories and Lies from 6 to 7:10. Okay? You're going to get an extra 10 minutes of Five Guys, Stories and Lies as they're going to lead you up to first pitch of Houston Astros baseball that you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game tonight. 9-6 win for the Astros. They had to hold on the other night in Game 1, but despite being riddled with injuries, they still found a way to beat one of the best teams in the National League in the Chicago Cubs. It helps when you have the former LSU star on your roster, Alex Bregman, knocking in multiple home runs. But it's the 12th home win in a month that they've battled severe injuries. Jose Altuve banged up, Springer banged up, and yet despite all of that, the Houston Astros just keep finding a way to win. They even had to play without shortstop Carlos Correa last night, who was held out for rest. Impressive. Astros just keep steamrolling right along. We'll see if they can sweep the Cubbies tonight. And you can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game. We got to hit a break. More RP3 and Company coming up after this right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber and 133 and 1133 in HD. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you'd like. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Cody Schutz, it's time to get some results from yesterday's poll question, which is now wrapped up, and then give us an update on today's, this morning's poll question, if you would please oblige us, sir.
Yeah, yesterday we asked, are you worried about LSU baseball facing Stony Brook in the Baton Rouge Regional? 136 votes on this poll question here. 71% of those say no, they are not worried.
And Cody Schutz is one of those.
I am one of those. I agree with our guys in the comments saying things like Coach Chris said it, so did Stephen Miller. George LeBron also in on saying that this is a far cry from what we've seen in 2012, was it, with Stony Brook. This is a much different team.
That was a once-in-a-generational kind of team for Stony Brook.
So I tend to agree with the 71% saying there's no reason to be worried. As I scroll up the Twitter feed now, we have our poll question for today. It is LSU's Will Wade. He's trying to rebuild some trust at LSU with the program. Do you trust Will Wade moving forward? 45 votes in already on this poll question. 71% of the odd, 71% again. 71% say yes, they do trust Will Wade.
Nice. So, LSU fans having their faith in their man, William Wade.
Bit of a vote of confidence from the 103.7 The Game Twitter poll there.
Vote of confidence.
For Will Wade.
Vote of confidence. We'll keep voting on the 103.7 The Game Twitter poll. Tell your friends. Tag them. You know, do what you got to do. Let the people know. All the cool kids are doing it. All the cool kids are doing it. Peer pressure right here from your host, RP3. Oh, we haven't done one of these in a while, brother. You ready?
Let's do it.
That's right. It's time for a little Louisiana wrap-up.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
Let's hop in the car, or maybe we're taking a wagon. Is it a bike? I don't know how we're getting there, but we're going. Nonetheless, let's start off on this Louisiana wrap-up over in the capital city of Baton Rouge. What do you got for me?
My man said we're taking a wagon. I like that. Oh, SEC track and field honors were released yesterday. And not a surprise, Lafayette's own, the former Mighty Lion himself, Mondo Duplantis, took men's field athlete of the year honors from the SEC, as well as men's freshman field athlete of the year honors. He got the twofer. Set the collegiate records, already won the indoor championship for the NCAA. He's gunning for the outdoor championships there in Austin. So just yet another accomplishment for the man they call Mondo. But he wasn't the only LSU star to take some top honors. No sirree. On the women's side, Richardson was named freshman runner of the year for LSU. That's Kerry Richardson. And LSU also took top honors as Dennis Shaver earned SEC Coach of the Year on the men's side. He was named the men's Coach of the Year by the SEC. So three top award winners for the LSU track and field teams. Congratulations to all of them, including our very own Mondo Duplantis.
Shout out to Armand, my man there. I love the French names from the Duplantis family there. Antoine, Armand. It's not bad. Speaking of French, we're going to head somewhere that is very much indulged in the French culture, and it's not inside the boot. It's our friends to the north, the great white.
The great white north.
Oh, Canada. Why, Raymond, why are we in Canada?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been to Canada. I enjoyed myself tremendously, by the way. Toronto's a terrific city.
Speaking of Toronto, NBA Finals.
That's right. Yes. Very clean city. I was surprised by when I went. I was like, wow, they're just paying people to clean up all the time?
I've heard they got good health care there, too.
They also have good health care, too. So, NBL Canada
We said NBA, and now you can't do your wrap-up.
I can't do my wrap-up. They released their all NBLC first team yesterday. Guess what?
Does the NBLC stand for the National Basketball League of Canada?
That is correct.
Just
it does.
Just making sure.
And one and only former Raging Cajun guard, Frank Bartley, who plays for the Riptide, was named, selected to the all NBLC first team honors. So congratulations to the former Raging Cajun, Frank Bartley, for picking up that award. Hopefully this will lead to something else. Maybe he continues having a terrific career up north, but maybe this gets him notice, maybe gets him some love, gets an invite to take part in an NBA G League team, or maybe even gets a tryout with an NBA franchise. So regardless if this leads to bigger and better things, to be named first team in the National Basketball League of Canada is still a great accomplishment for the former Raging Cajun star. So congrats to Frank Bartley.
It makes me curious. I'm going to have to go do some research. I wonder if there are weird rules in Canadian basketball like there are in Canadian football. You know what I mean? Like, guys get a running start in football. Do we get some kind of crazy,
Did you say they get a running start?
They do in football. I mean, you know, the guys are...
I know. I
just wonder if Canadian basketball is weird like that as well. Maybe they actually use peach baskets. That's probably what they do. We got one more stop to make.
They actually use peach baskets, my man says.
And it's a good thing we've only got one stop left because we've taken this wagon from Baton Rouge to Canada. It's about to fall apart because we have now come all the way home to Lafayette.
The horses are dying. The transmission is...
There's a transmission in the wagon? I didn't know that.
It's a souped-up wagon. It's very Back to the Future-esque. Back to the Future 3.
Great, Scott. Let's talk about this final stop now. We're home. We're in the heart of Acadiana. We're in Lafayette. There's some pretty darn cool news.
That's right.
This one I can get behind for sure.
Yesterday, UL, the Raging Cajuns, announced that tailgating for university students is returning to Cajun Field in 2019.
Should have never left.
A tailgating for the university students will be located in the southeast corner of the Cajun Field footprint. So university students now have a big reason to cheer as UL football takes the field for this upcoming season as student tailgating will return. Fans and the general public will be able to access the south concourse of Cajun Field 8 hours prior to kickoff each game day.
So what happens when that 11 a.m. kickoff rolls around? They're like, don't act like it didn't happen.
Oh, getting set up at 3 in the morning.
Gee.
Is that right, math? Right?
It doesn't matter. It's not going to happen for me.
So both the east and the west sides of the stadium will be connected by a short, easy walk, and restrooms and concession facilities above the south end zone will also be available for the tailgaters.
That's not... So the porta potties, the lines, they will be much less.
That is correct. So if students are interested in reserving tailgating space, can do so by registering with the Office of Student Engagement and Leadership at a later date. Students are reminded that admission to UL Athletic Sporting Events is free of charge with their Cajun card. So you're telling me if I'm a student at UL, I can go to a game for free, and now I got me a tailgating zone?
And there's beer in the stadium. I never understood. I went to UL for 2.5 years, graduated from there, went to as many home football games as I possibly could. I lived in Bayou Shadows, so it was walking distance for me. I didn't have to drive to the games.
I know where that's at.
Yeah, so it was super simple. I went to as many home games as I could, and the team maybe underperformed a little bit while I was enrolled there, but it was still some of the most fun I've had at college football games. And now, with the tailgating coming back, and like I said, in my opinion, it should have never left. This is good things if you want the attendance to kind of rise, because when it comes to schools, in my opinion, when it comes to schools like UL, like ULM, like Louisiana Tech, and even schools like that outside of Louisiana, if your attendance is going to be impressive, it's going to require a lot of your students to show up to the game.
Correct. You need the voice of the students. You need them to be rowdy. You need them to be pumped up because they feed off the energy of one another.
Right.
And the rest of the crowd will do so as well. Regardless if that's at Cajun Field or at the PMAC. Student section packs in. It just brings energy to the whole thing. So if you are a Raging Cajun student, you have even now a better reason to go support the Raging Cajuns this fall. Go out there, tailgate. Get your fun on, man.
Now, we're going to have to check. I know when I went to UL, you got in for free with your student ID. And then also, you were allowed one like guest ticket, and you so you could get in one person as well for only $10.
Nice.
So I mean, you know, you can bring yourself and a buddy as long as your buddy's got a $10 bill.
Now, did you ever invite the world famous CD?
He was always there. We didn't necessarily.
That means no.
I knew Clint though. We had classes together. I bumped into him one time after a football game, walking back to Bayou Shadows at that ShopRite right there at the corner Congress and Gilbo, I believe it is. There's a little gas station right there. I bumped into him in the parking lot one time, him and his dad walking home. But I also ran into a guy. I did a on-the-court thing for the Pelicans I told you about, and I made a fool of myself and all that. That guy that I like raced against that beat me on the Pelicans court apparently went to UL. He was at one of the games one time. I was in the perfect right frame of mind when he walked up to me and was like, "Do you remember me?" And I thought we were going to have to fight or something. I was like, who are you? I don't understand. And then I was like, oh, my God, why are you here right now? So
a lot why are cool you stalking
stuff,
me?
A lot of cool stuff happens at UL football games. That's my point. It doesn't always have to be about the game.
That's right. You can go to the game, support the team, but then also have fun beforehand and afterwards.
Now, if the team is really good or the team is at least competitive.
They were last year?
Right. It makes everything better. Don't get me wrong. Don't get what I'm saying twisted. It makes things better if the team is good or competitive, but you know, it's South Louisiana. You don't need me to tell you that you need a good football team to have a good time, because you don't.
That is correct.
Because you don't.
That may be the most honest thing you've ever said on this program, my friend.
I mean, I went to the LSU-Florida game when it was rescheduled and South Alabama got canceled.
I remember that.
And all that. I bought tickets to the South Alabama game, got to go to the Florida game. It was pretty sweet.
Score.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. But I went to that LSU, lost that game on like a last-second play. I hated it. It was the worst. But I mean, looking back now, LSU kickoff at noon in Tiger Stadium, so many people so hammered by before lunchtime. Like, no, I would do it again in a heartbeat, even though LSU lost. So I'm just trying to say, get to the game and make your own fun. Come on. You know what to do.
There we go.
You're in college only once.
Listen to the UL grad. UL students. He's speaking directly to you. That's the Cody Shoots. Bringing the hot fire. Woo! It's not even rant of the week time. My man's bringing it. When we come back here, we'll wrap up the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. So, you know the Los Angeles Lakers an absolute dumpster fire right now. They've overtaken the Knicks and the Jets in the NFL and the Raiders even, as probably the worst ran sports franchise. And it's just constantly something coming out of La La Land that is just gold. But nothing, not Magic Johnson quitting inexplicably, not the botched trade request for Anthony Davis, not the fact of poor coach after poor coach. No, none of that, none of that. This is something that you're going to appreciate greatly. This epitomizes why the Lakers are an absolute dumpster fire, and it's prompted us to debut a new segment here on RP3 and Company, a little segment we like to call They Said What?
Superstar athletes and championship coaches are really good at many things, but coherent thoughts formed into actual words is sometimes not one of them.
Faith for me is believing in the Son of God, Jesus Christ, and he is the only one I've ever met that can handle my junk.
I want me some glory hope.
This is RP3 and Company's They Said What?
This place is getting lit. Hey, I got my icy on. I know you got your icy on.
What? What? I feel like Stone Cold should be all over in this segment. This is a Stone Cold segment for sure. Raymond, I believe the subject of this RP3 and Company's or the maiden voyage of right. They Said What on RP3 and I believe the subject is Rob Pelinka.
That's right. Pelinka is the man in charge, former agent of...
Rob Pelinka first is an idiot, and I'll continue.
The former longtime agent of Kobe Bryant, right? So one of the greatest Lakers allegedly. Of all time. Allegedly. And this is a guy who's in the front office that Magic Johnson couldn't work with, that Magic Johnson has claimed stabbed him in the back and that he's a liar. Well, there may be
you got some, anything to back that up, Magic?
There may be some truth to that as, well, I'm just going to let Rob Pelinka tell you right here.
It's just basketball.
Yeah.
And I remember just a really quick story. There was one time when Kobe, who I worked with for 18 years, was going back to play in Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And he had just seen The Dark Knight. Obviously, you guys saw that movie. And he's like, hey, hook me up with dinner with Heath Ledger, because he got so locked into that role. I want to know how he mentally went there. And so we had dinner with Heath, and he talked about how he locks in for a role, and Kobe used some of that in his game against the Knicks in terms of mental preparation. And so I know for you, your craft, your art, how you've gotten to be number one, and then how you stay there is going to be inspiring.
That is actual audio. Words, those words actually came out of Rob Pelinka's mouth. He's actually telling that to The Rock.
The Rock is about to lay the smacketh down on your candy ass, Rob Pelinka.
Now, you're thinking, well, that sounds like a great story.
Dark Knight, great movie.
Great movie.
Heath Ledger, best Joker yet.
Won the Oscar, Best Supporting Actor Oscar, for his performance in The Dark Knight. Phenomenal movie, redefines comic book movies as art. Yet there's just one little problem with what he told The Rock there.
Let's see. The Dark Knight came out on July 18th of 2008.
That's correct.
Okay. Heath Ledger, as I look it up, Heath Ledger died January 22nd, 2008.
There's just a few issues with what
No,
Rob
there's
believed.
Not. There's only one. There's just one issue. There's not many. There's not just my one
man,
issue.
My man stood up there in front of a crowd of people and told The Rock just straight up that just made up this entire lie.
Made it up.
Just made up that Kobe was so impressed by Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker and The Dark Knight that he wanted to have a lunch and have a dinner with him, and Rob Pelinka set that up.
And apparently it happened. I don't...
Heath Ledger was dead before the movie even came out. My man sat there with a straight face and told that nonsense to The Rock. This is why the Los Angeles Lakers are a dumpster fire, is this right here, because you got a guy in the front office that...
said what? They literally said what?
And I just want to ask Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I just want to ask him, dude, when he said, did you just want to like just give him the?
Because The Rock is quiet in that whole clip. When you hear The Rock doesn't, he's standing there and he's just listening. And then when he mentions that, oh yeah, he wanted to have dinner with Heath, so they had dinner and they talked about it. And then The Rock starts going, yep, Oh, is this a work? Like, Rock's like, am I getting punked? Where
is this a skit I'm not aware of? Oh, the Lakers.
What we're saying is fail by Rob Pelinka.
So, right,
hey, what makes it even better? The name of these little meetings they're having is the Los Angeles Lakers Genius Series. You can't make that up. The Lake Show, baby.
What an absolute train wreck. Oh, goodness.
You could say, maybe they could use a little magic right now.
Oh my God. They could use a whole lot. So, yes, that's our first, Rob Pelinka is our first member of the RP3 and Company. They said what? Oh. Hey, yeah, dinner with the dead man. Sure, why not? That's going to do it for the second hour. Daniel Brown from The Athletic's next.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that belt.
time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head back out to the Arco Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He's the senior editor and writer for The Athletic San Francisco. You can follow him on Twitter at Brownie Athletic. It's the one and only Daniel Brown. Daniel, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Good. Thank you for having me on.
I appreciate you making some time for us, Daniel. Finally, here we are. NBA Finals is here. Thursday night, Warriors versus the Raptors. And I'm not for sure a lot of people had that penciled in. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the matchup. But I want to get your thoughts on Kevin Durant. We know he's not going to be going for game one. When do we anticipate Durant returning to the lineup? And what about Iggy and what about Boogie Cousins for the Warriors?
Yeah, I think in all cases, especially Durant, his health is going to change dramatically depending on how the series goes. I think with each Warriors victory, if they can win one on the road, you know, take game one, that buys him more time. I think he might be kind of a, in case of emergency, break glass kind of thing. Naturally, the Warriors are a little tight-lipped, even more so than they would be during the regular season about his status. They just kind of go game by game and rule him out. I mean, I think the troubling thing, if you're really dying to see Durant in the finals, as I am, since he's a two-time finals MVP, but he hasn't been cleared for on-court activity yet, and it's not like he's going to need a little time. He knows what he's doing out there, but that's always kind of the telltale sign when a guy's getting close to come back is when they can join practice, when they can scrimmage a little bit, when they can, you know, mix it up on those off days, and so far there's been no sign of that with Durant. Same thing with Iguodala and Cousins. I think they may really vary their outlook based on games one and two and how those fare.
We're talking with Daniel Bryan of The Athletic here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Daniel, I have a question. How is Klay Thompson not anywhere on the NBA teams for this year? Yeah, we had the great eye roll, and his response is basically about chasing championships, but how does he not get on there anywhere?
I mean, that's a great question. I thought his answer was fantastic and very, very on-brand for Klay Thompson. I mean, it was the eye roll, and then you see him kind of fighting himself to be diplomatic, right? He's saying, hey, I respect those guys, whatever, I think might have been in there someplace, but he said, like, what you said, which is five straight finals. You don't do it with kind of run-of-the-mill players. You do it with all-time players. And Klay Thompson, you know, 20, 30 years down the road is going to be remembered as an all-time player because I think what maybe gets overlooked in that all-second team, all-third team, the kind of spot where he should have ended up this year is his defense. What he's been called upon to do in these playoffs alone just shows how valuable he is to the Warriors on that side of the ball, when he can be assigned to James Harden and keep an eye on Damian Lillard. I mean, the guy is responsible for shutting down the other team's best offensive threat, and there's a lot of shooting guards in the NBA who wouldn't be up to that task, and Thompson is, year after year. So I do see the other side of it, right? You're not judging an all-NBA team based on legacy and career output. You're doing it on that specific framework of that specific regular season. And Thompson, like a lot of other Warriors, doesn't play at that same intensity level in January and February because they don't need to. They're saving their strength for this time of year. So I can see both sides of the argument, but Klay, I thought whatever happened, it was worth it just to see that reaction.
We're talking with Daniel Brown of The Athletic here on RP3 and Company. Daniel, if you're the Warriors, though, you have to be kind of happy secretly because he didn't get NBA, all NBA honors. That means he can't get more money with this contract. So if you're the Warriors, you're going to maybe be able to get Klay Thompson on a cheaper deal than you would have.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but honestly, I think the Warriors would have been perfectly happy to pay him whatever. They're making so much money during this during the title run, and they're about to move from Oakland, Oracle Arena, to this fancy new Chase Center over in San Francisco. So they're not hurting for cash, and they're very appreciative for his contributions now and forever. I mean, to the brand of this Warriors franchise, Klay Thompson has been worth every penny. So, you know, I'm sure at some level they can find other uses for that, those $30 million or so. But they wouldn't have bit too hard and grinding their teeth to pay Klay Thompson what he was worth and what he's earned.
We're talking with Daniel Brown of The Athletic here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Daniel, so the Warriors are going to be moving into their new facility next year, correct? They're going to be in San Francisco next year?
Correct.
And then the Raiders are going to be leaving Oakland as well. They'll be in Las Vegas next year or the year after?
Next year is the plan.
So the only team left in Oaktown is going to be the A's.
Correct. And they're looking for a new home, too, although they're looking for a new home in Oakland.
Okay.
So they're the ones that's going to stick in the same area code, at least.
Well, at least Oakland has that going for it. Let's talk about this matchup. Let's switch over to the Eastern Conference. Kawhi Leonard, I've said this before, and I'd love your insight. This is a guy who is a Finals MVP. People have forgotten that for whatever reason. And things fell apart in San Antonio, whatever side you want to believe, it just fell apart. And the Spurs are worse without him. And they've shown that the last 2 years. And he's took Toronto, a team that always lost in the playoffs, and he carried them on his back. And now they're in the NBA Finals for the first time. How impressed have you been with Kawhi Leonard from start to finish this year and what he's been able to do with the Raptors?
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, somebody pointed out that he was the Finals MVP the last time the Warriors didn't win, right? He wins the MVP of the Finals, and then it's been Warriors, and now here he is back again playing at all-time NBA level. I mean, the clinic he's been putting on during those Eastern Conference playoffs were phenomenal. He's taking the big shot when everybody knows he's going to take it. He's making it anyway in spectacular fashion, and he's playing defense, like in a way that the Warriors like to pride themselves on, right? He's not just a scorer. He's a guy who's doing it both ends. And remember, Leonard has a score to settle with the Warriors. He got injured in an NBA playoff game when Spurs with the Warriors, and now I'm drawing a blank. Zaza Pachulia stepped under him on a three-point attempt, and that injury kind of derailed his career. So now, at long last, they meet again with everything on the line, and I think that subplot isn't even a subplot. I think it's going to be one of the defining elements of this series is his chance to get a little payback.
Is Kawhi good enough to help the Raptors sneak a game or two in this series, in your opinion?
I do for sure. I mean, especially if Durant is out. I mean, the Warriors do have such, they're so good on defense and they're versatile with their switches and you know, they're smart team defense. But as with everybody, Kawhi Leonard presents matchup problems, and it's hard to say, you know, one guy is going to stop him. And I think Durant, for as much offense as he provided all season and in an NBA Finals past, he's a terrific defender who is kind of getting better every year, and they counted on him a lot at times. If Draymond or Klay Thompson or whatever needed a break or they wanted to try something different, Durant was always up for the challenge too. So I'm disappointed, just from a basketball level, that we can't see that matchup of two, you know, however you want to say it, two of the top four NBA players going head-to-head would have been fun to watch.
We're talking with Daniel Brown of The Athletic here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Daniel, a big reason why Toronto was able to win that series after being down 2-0 to the Bucks was the performance of everyone else, including Kawhi Leonard, but everyone else. The bench, Van Fleet, other guys, Kyle Lowry had a good series. Those guys stepped up. How big is it for the depth of Toronto, Ibaka, and all those other guys to be able to play at a high level against the Warriors for them to win?
Yeah, no, I think that could be if they're going to win, that's how they're going to do it. They're going to do it with the bench. Because the Warriors' bench was called upon a lot more than expected in Game 6 and 7 because of the injuries to Iguodala and the injuries to Durant. but their bench during the regular season showed some weaknesses. They didn't come off the bench and provide instant offense. I think guys like Quinn Cook, they're kind of a defensive liability. They couldn't hold down the fort a lot of times in terms of protecting leads, even over a short span. So, and to their credit, in games 6 and 7 against the Rockets, when they had to, you know, Jordan Bell, guys that you just didn't expect, did what they were supposed to do. But can you count on that in the finals? Can you count on that against a very deep Raptors bench? You know, that could be, like you say, that could be a key to the series, because that's where the Raptors have an edge.
How are we going to look at this series with the celebrity? And I'm talking about Drake, obviously. Is this going to be the old Spike Lee with the Knicks versus the Indiana Pacers kind of contentious? Are they going to give them hell when that series goes back to Oakland?
Yeah, I think so. And, for much fun as it is, I really hope it doesn't become too much of a distraction, because it's going to take away from a great series and an all-time dynasty team going for that fourth championship in a fifth straight finals. And Drake should, in a perfect series, he stays very much in the minor sideshow niche and is not in every photo and every clip and every TV timeout that we got to see Drake every time. And
I do believe your prayers are going to fall on deaf ears there, Daniel.
Yeah, I know. If you're listening out there, the Warriors have their fair share of celebrities too. They've had NBA finals where Beyonce is in the crowd. I'm trying to think of other people who have been there over time. And I mean, they're not immune to this celebrity pull, but you don't want it to overshadow the basketball. And Drake, I think, would be perfectly happy if it did, based on his willingness to stand up in the spotlight whenever he can. But, gosh, I think we'll all be better off if it's on Steph Curry and Kawhi Leonard and save the music for the Grammys.
Drake loves him some Drake. We'll leave it at that. Daniel, one last question before we let you go. We're talking to Daniel Brown of The Athletic. You can follow him at Brownie Athletic. Daniel, Golden State is going to three-peat here. Is that what you believe? And how many games do you think it's going to take?
Sure. I think everybody else on the planet is saying Warriors in 6, so I'll say Warriors in 7, just to be a little bit different. the Warriors, I think the more I really have come to believe that experience matters in this kind of thing. And with the Raptors, the first time on this stage, it's not just handling the clutch moments, it's handling the disruption of the schedule and the media demands and, even the shoot around routines are different. And the Warriors, like the Patriots during Super Bowl week, they know the drill by now. They know how it goes. This is what they're where they expect it to be. And I don't think that's a small factor. I think that those guys would know exactly what's required of them at this exact moment and will be distracted by nothing. Where the Raptors probably have a learning curve in terms of how different this is to any other time in the season.
Daniel, I appreciate you making some time for us here. Enjoy this series, and keep up the good work there at the Athletic.
Okay, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to be on.
That's Daniel Brown. You can follow him at Brownie Athletic. He's a senior editor and writer for The Athletic there in San Francisco, breaking down a little NBA Finals for us from the Golden State Warriors' perspective. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game reminds you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. If you want to give us a call, you can. We'd love to talk to you on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Coming up after this segment, we're going to welcome on Mark Ballard. He's the Capital News reporter, editor for the Baton Rouge Advocate. He's going to break down everything that occurred with the sports betting bill that died yesterday in the House Appropriations Committee. He's going to give us all the nuts and bolts about that, kind of break it down for all of us sports fans on why we can't go place a bet inside the state of Louisiana and still have to go take our money over to Mississippi. Think about that for a second. Mississippi is better than us in something? What? Say what?
What do we have now?
Mississippi? Winning? Beating Louisiana? Oh, that's a tough pill to swallow. We'll talk about that with Mark coming up. Excuse me. We start off today's show talking about the Will Wade presser that took place yesterday at SEC spring meetings in lovely Destin, Florida. And he seemed a bit sincere. He also seemed a little cagey. Wasn't as transparent as you would obviously like, or as the folks at Yahoo Sports would like, rather. My thoughts are this. They're going to be moving forward with Will Wade. You may not like him. You may believe that he cheated. You may believe whatever you may believe. The reality is that he's going to be the head coach coming up for his third season for the LSU men's basketball team. They got Skylar Mays coming back, Emmett Williams, Javonte Smart, Marlon Taylor. They got some top prospects coming in. They're going to be a good team. And Will Wade's going to be the coach. Now, whether or not the guy who is cagey with the media, the guy who comes off as arrogant, the guy who was childish when facing the Raging Cajuns in the first round of the NIT two seasons ago. Has that guy grown up? Has this humbled him? Has this made him, given him a dose of humility? Maybe. At the end of the day, I don't care. And neither should you. You don't need your coach to be lovable. You don't need your coach to be likable. Hell, you don't even have to like your coach. The coach's job is to coach. Very simple. You can't put what you want someone to be on a coach or an athlete. It's a dangerous thing. It's a slippery slope when you do that. So Will Wade will be the coach moving forward. And that's where we stand with that. And he says he's going to try to rebuild the trust with his players, with the staff, with the university, with the fan base. And look, at the end of the day, if he produces a winner, winning solves all issues. If LSU comes out next year and they win the SEC again, or they make a run in the SEC tournament, or they get into the NCAA tournament and advance to the Sweet 16, is anyone really going to care about that Yahoo report earlier this year? Is anyone going to care? If nothing comes from that, if the NCAA does not strip LSU of any victories or any sanction and enforce any sanctions or anything like that, is anyone going to care? It's a legitimate question. I think we all need to be a little bit more honest with ourselves and answer that correctly. And just kind of come to terms with what it is really all about. Cody Schutz, we've asked the people to vote. I know it got some early traction. People were voting. Do you trust Will Wade? He talked about that he made mistakes, and he talked about how he was wanting to regain people's trust with the LSU basketball program. We put it up on a Twitter poll question on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Do you trust Will Wade? Where do we stand now with that, my friend?
We've got 80 votes in now on the question. 78% say yes, they do trust Will Wade moving forward. We got our guy, Doug, commenting on the question, saying that, I trust him not to discuss sensitive things on the phone. So
take a bow, Doug. Take a bow, Doug. Good for Doug. Take a bow. I trust him not to say about sensitive things on his phone. Yeah, that'd be the first thing I'd do. Actually,
lesson learned.
If I was anyone involved in his inner circle, I'm like, Coach, guess what? Glad to have you back.
We're going Cricket Wireless.
Guess what? No, you don't even get a burner phone. You have no phone. You are on phone restriction. You have to write out stuff, and we will take care of it for you. No phone privileges. That should be part of his contract. Make it easier to fire him, and all, by the way, you get no phone. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk to Mark Ballard, the Baton Rouge Advocate. He's going to tell us all about the sports betting legislation that failed, got killed in a House Appropriations Committee yesterday, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. We briefly talked about it earlier in today's show about the legalization of sports betting in the state of Louisiana being dealt what appears a death blow, maybe a nearly death blow. And we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and talk more about that with our next guest. He is the editor of the Advocate Capital News Bureau covering Louisiana government and politics. You can follow him at Mark Ballard CNB. It's Mark Ballard. Mark, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, pretty good. It's a beautiful day out. How are you?
Doing well. I know you typically don't spend a lot of time doing sports talk radio, but I appreciate you making the exception with us this morning. I want you to come on and kind of clarify things and clear things up with everyone. We'll get to what happened yesterday by the House Appropriations Committee, which pretty much gave a huge blow to sports betting being legalized here in the state of Louisiana. But walk me through it. I know this legislation passed the Senate, but it's been amended a lot of times, and a lot of people have issues with that, what the bill contains overall. So can you kind of walk us through the history of this, the people that have been pushing it, and how we got to this point?
Okay. It was primarily the casinos, riverboats, and the land-based casino and the casinos at the racetracks had been wanting it. The argument was that Mississippi already has it, Arkansas's racetracks already have it, and Louisiana's casinos are losing customers from Louisiana to go to the Gulf Coast and go sports betting. The idea is that it's not so much that you're good, that they're going to make a lot of money off the bets themselves. It's usually about a 4 or 5% margin, profit margin, but it gets folks into the casinos, you know, and you eat your chicken wings and watch the Saints while making bets. That's where they're making their money. But it was also there's a large group of conservatives that see this as an expansion of gambling, which they don't want to see. They don't want to actually see gambling in Louisiana at all. And this was an expansion of it. Then what happened was that you had a lot of special interests that tried to jump on and get a lot of the money that they wanted. You had video poker interests who wanted to expand it to video poker locations. That's about 2,800 truck stops and bars and that sort of thing around the state. You had the horsemen, the folks at the horse racing industry, the breeders and the trainers. They wanted a cut of it. Then there were folks trying to stop it and slow it down, and so that they were throwing on that only official league records could be used to settle the bets. No other state does that. And so it just became this sort of big mishmash And yesterday, the casinos withdrew their support for it, and it just kind of crumbled. I tell you that that it's near death because in Louisiana, nothing is dead until they actually adjourn. But the sponsors of the bill are saying that it's just not very likely that it's going to come back and save us.
We're talking with Mark Ballard of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mark, who are some of the, you know, I know the casinos withdrew their support yesterday, and that's before the House Appropriations Committee made their decision. Who are some of the lawmakers throughout the state that were pushing this initial bill, and have any of them distanced themselves now since it's been kind of amended over and over and over again?
Well, the primary sponsor is Senator Danny Martini. He's from Metairie, Kenner area. And he's in his last couple of months as a state senator. He said that he got involved with it because he was one of those guys that went over to Mississippi and just saw everybody he knew from Louisiana in the Mississippi casinos making sports bets last fall. So this is something that he's been pushing as a way of increasing competition. You had Joseph Marino, who is not affiliated with the party, and he's from Gretna. He was handling the bill on the House side. And those were the two main guys. They didn't really distance themselves from, they did one ways. Martini said that, you add all this stuff, you're going to kill the bill. But they also were trying to figure, a bloated bill can be stripped down the way. And they didn't want to kind of give up on it, even though it had got bloated to the point where they didn't want to, that it wasn't the bill that they wanted to get passed, but they felt like if we keep it alive long enough, then we can get the bill passed and fix it back the way we'd like it. But that just didn't work out yesterday.
We're talking with Mark Ballard of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mark, the House Appropriations Committee, you cover the state government and the ins and outs there in Baton Rouge. Were you surprised that the House Appropriations Committee killed the measure, or is that something that you kind of anticipated based on the makeup of the lawmakers that make up the committee?
Yeah, the committee is very conservative. There are a lot of the what we call the conservative evangelical community who have their representatives on that committee. Now, I was not surprised that something like this happened. What was surprising was that last week they let one of the bills go through. and that was a kind of a surprise. So I went into yesterday saying, I don't know. I mean, it's like at a horse track, they ran a different way last week than yesterday. They ran the way that I think everybody thought they would.
Mark, where do we stand now with this? Is this something that will just get scrapped and they will create a new bill for a future session, and when do you think that would be?
Well, from what I've been talking to the sponsors of it, the folks that are behind it, I think it's dead for this year. I mean, and then, I'll say that with a caveat, but I think it's dead for this year, and whether it comes back again next year, I guess, is up in the air to see what happens, but it would be next year. There are a couple of instruments, the caveat being that there are a couple of instruments, a couple of bills that they could attach all of this legalization wording onto and get a vote in the House and the Senate. But we're talking about the legislature adjourns on Thursday, so there's got to be, a two-thirds vote from, almost from here on out to get anything passed. And They couldn't make 53, which is the bare majority in the House. They couldn't do that yesterday twice. And so I would say that even though there is this slim technical possibility of them being able to get it through this time, I think it's over until next year, depending on if anybody wants to pick it up after this year's bruising campaign.
We're talking with Mark Ballard of the Advocate Capital News Bureau here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mark, where does the governor side on this? Has he publicly made any statements regarding the legislation? Is he for or against it, or has he been keeping quiet about it?
Yeah, he's publicly waffled on this. He says, in general, I like the idea. We need to keep, let's keep it, gambling in Louisiana is the number one source of revenues for state government. They give more money to state government than oil and gas. And So he's supportive, but, you know, the way he and governors before him would always say is that, well, I'm going to reserve my judgment until I actually see the bill, what the bill says. So it's sort of a general for it, you know, but then at the same time, leaving himself an out in case he needs to go against it.
Mark, I also know elections are going to be coming up in the fall. Obviously, we have the governor's race. In addition, there's some other House and Senate races. I know Taylor Barrah out of New Iberia, his time will be ending here when this session wraps up. He's going to be termed out. I know that means there's going to be a lot of moving pieces, so to speak. Will the future of this bill depend a lot on what occurs during the fall, during the elections?
Oh, absolutely, it does. The people who are adamantly the representatives and senators who are adamantly against gambling in the state are a sizable minority, but they're still a minority. This election, all 144 seats are going to be up for either re-election or new folks, and of which about a third of them are going to be brand new. And there are efforts out there to, you know, get someone along various partisan and philosophical lines. So if you add to the group that is against gambling, you're not going to see this bill back. You may even see a rollback of gambling altogether.
We're talking
Depending
on who gets elected. We're talking with Mark Ballard here of the Advocate Capital News Bureau here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mark, I want to ask you something that's not associated with the sports betting bill, but quickly before we let you go. You did report that the Louisiana Senate amended a bill creating the Team Gleason, named after the former New Orleans Saints special team star who's battling ALS. You said here right. that they amended a bill creating the Team Gleason prestige license plate, which helps raise money for the fight against ALS, so that people that actually have ALS and ride in vans with handicap plates can also get the prestige plates. Was that something that was not part of the – obviously it wasn't something part of the bill to begin with. That seems curious that people with ALS wouldn't have been kind of taken care of in the original legislation of an ALS bill.
Yeah, that was that was something that was a little bit overlooked because the ALS patients are basically riding around in vans that have to have the handicapped plates on them, and they use ramps and stuff to get in and out of the vans. So they're the ones that use that, you know, 8 feet to the side in the handicapped parking. But the Gleason bill was a prestige plate, but it was not a handicap prestige plate. So that meant that the folks that actually had ALS couldn't actually get the prestige plate. So, but this was the way that they amended it, the way Senator J.P. Morrell handled it on the floor for Representative Leger, they amended it so that it would also cover handicaps. They have little tags, and now people with ALS can actually purchase the prestige plate.
Perfect.
And that should be coming up today, actually, the final vote on it.
Well, Mark, I appreciate you making some time for us. I know you're busy with the session wrapping up this week, but keep up the terrific reporting, and thank you so much for taking some of your time out for us today.
Well, thank you. Enjoyed it. Have a good day.
You too. That's Mark Ballard, Baton Rouge Advocate, Capital News reporter / editor, covering the session, giving us the lowdown there on the sports betting bill that apparently appears to be dead.
I don't know if it was the way you were asking the questions or if it's simply because Mark, you know, writes about these things for a living, so he knows, he probably understands that he's writing for an audience that doesn't generally understand a lot of the specifics.
If you're a political reporter, especially a government reporter, you have to write in a way that makes it easily digestible.
Right. And I felt like he was speaking that way, too, because I followed basically all of what he was saying when, at the beginning of the interview, I did not expect that to be the case. I figured I would get lost somewhere in the middle of this interview here, but I didn't. It was just an interesting thought to me. It almost got fun for me because I listen to a lot of interviews all day, you know, every day, 5 days a week, right? And it's interesting to me when I hear somebody explain things in ways that I'm like, ah. And it was fun to hear, like, how is he going to explain this in the way that I understand, and he continued to do that the whole time, and I thought that was impressive.
That's why he's one of the top guys at the Advocate.
Right, right. You don't become the editor of that whole bureau over
there
for nothing.
You're not the man in charge of covering Capital News for nothing.
Right. Yeah. Capital with an O, by the way.
That's right.
Capital News.
Good job, Cody Schutz. My man's been on point today. Well, we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will wrap up the special hump day edition of the show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Yeah, we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. If you don't have it, if you haven't checked it out, by all means do so. And just not because you can look at my big, beautiful, bald head in high definition. I mean, that should be one of the reasons why you're checking it out, but not the only reason. Just saying.
Ray? No. I was going to change the subject. I was about to take a hard left turn, so I wasn't even going to pick on you.
Oh, hard left turn time?
We're going to take a hard left turn here. We didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday because, admittedly, I had yet to watch Monday Night Raw because I was so tired. I couldn't make it. I managed to finish it yesterday, and I watched SmackDown last night. So I managed to stay up, and I got through all that. SmackDown was good. Nothing special about it, but it was interesting, I guess. It became the number one trend worldwide on Twitter at like towards the middle of the show, and I don't know exactly why. I'm not sure what happened. It must have been a slow Twitter night or something, because nothing really that crazy happened, but yet there it was, number one trend worldwide. What I'm more referring to, though, of course, Ray, would be the Firefly Funhouse.
Yes.
We watched the latest incarnation of it. We found out the name of the mask-wearing personality, the Fiend. And I've seen many, many different opinions online about this Bray Wyatt thing, and they all seem to echo what your opinion was yesterday when we talked about it shortly. Your opinion was, it's time for the payoff. You know what I mean? We've built, and it's time for the payoff.
It seemed like the previous week was set up as, because Bray Wyatt in real life welcomed a new addition to his family.
It's Baby Rotunda.
That's right, Baby Rotunda. So I think that's why they went with the shortened clip where he wasn't even there.
Right, which that was weird, because I would have guessed, as someone who works in production, I would have thought, oh, well, they film these, you know, well ahead of time, and they can, that way if something changes, they can make adjustments. But apparently not. Apparently they're filming as we go on a week-by-week basis, because, like you said, last week with Bray having a kid, that would explain why the clip was nothing live. It was basically like a best of.
But I do love what they did this week. But once again, you had the shortened just clip the week before. Then this week, he was there, but it set up what the name of that character is going to be. And right? And the whole thing is, it elaborated more on the Fiend. And I liked that. And I think that's going to be the whole thing, is that the Fiend is going to be provoked and is going to come out. And Bray Wyatt's going to go from, hey, I'm this children's show host, to I'm going to become the Fiend and destroy you. And it should happen soon, right? They can't keep. We've done this now for 5 weeks?
Five? Yeah, I think so.
Five or six weeks? So they've built up the momentum. It's trending. They're getting a lot of positive interaction on social media. But that payoff's got to come soon.
And I gave you a few weeks back my fan theory about how the Firefly Funhouse is the rebuilt Hardy compound, right? Because Sister Abigail's in the window and this and that. I'm thinking I was off base, which is fair, because that's the fun thing about fan theories, is that was my thought at the time, but that's obviously not the case now. I kind of have, it's not necessarily a fan theory, but I think it's interesting to see when Abby calls him a psychopath or a bad man, he's crazy and this and that, and then Bray calls Abby a bully, and then Abby wants to get out of limbo and she wants to rest, and Bray tells her that she can never rest. He won't let her rest. You have to be here. I'm starting to see now that I think maybe we're seeing a shift from it's Bray Wyatt who's kind of being held under the thumb by these puppets and these other characters. I'm starting to think that we've been kind of tricked this whole time, and I think Bray Wyatt is actually in charge.
And the Fiend is in charge.
Good job for WWE on that, because I should have seen that coming and I didn't.
When's the next pay-per-view?
Well, if we're not counting the Saudi Arabia show, which we're not, it's like a couple of weeks, a few weeks. I'm not exactly sure what the date is, but
you think they're going to play this out until then?
I hope so. I mean, he has to show up before the pay-per-view, I think, at least one time, even if it's on the go, he has to make an appearance, but I could see his in-ring debut being at a pay-per-view.
Unless they just let him destroy both Raw and SmackDown back-to-back nights. Completely random, like just random selection of just interfering and going there and destroying people backstage and in the ring.
It's chaos. It could happen.
That's going to do it for this Hump Day edition. Tune in tomorrow. I'll be broadcasting live from Houston right here on 103.7 The Game.